All right, so this is our time to open the workshop to being written to a certain extent by you. All right, so if you don't mind, if you bring your issues, bring your questions, bring your ideas in and ask us. And Daniel has the microphone and he will give it to you as you raise your hand if you have a question, concern, or any kind of involvement you want to look at in this whole process on this theme. Okay? So who would like to begin?
Hello, Galexis. It's Heather Rose.
Hello.
Hello. What I wanted to ask you is, when you were talking about the different chakras, I resonated strongly to the root chakra. And I feel that I'm at a time in my life where I do want to expand beyond the levels of success that I have allowed myself. And I would like to get some more understanding on what's blocking me from allowing more of the successes that I do want to create into my reality. I feel I created a certain level, but I'm ready to move beyond that.
All right. Well, of course, yes. When you're looking at success, you're looking at more than survival. Mostly the whole sense of being secure, being safe with the amount of money you have and the things that you have and the patterns and routines on and the resources that come to you in your work. That kind of day-to-day stuff. Yes, root chakra has definitely a bit to do with that. And we do see that you have in the past said, okay, I'm putting the worldly aside and I'm going to focus on my spirituality. And so here you've taken it back and you're saying, yes, yes, I know that I can have it all. I know I can be safe and secure financially, and I can also, you know, be a spiritual being, and I can even bring spirituality into the marketplace. I can bring it everywhere. I can make my whole life resonate with it, you see? And so that's what you're in the process of doing. It's a grander vision, right? So not only does it affect your root chakra, but it is also a big component of your third eye. And we would say that for you is that, yes, you at one time, several times, and even earlier in this lifetime at one point, you felt a certain fear about going beyond the limits of what was acceptable and okay that were given to you, maybe by your parents or your peers in adolescence or whatever it was. But there was a place where you were hesitant to really get out there and stand out there and be extraordinary and be visible. You understand?
Absolutely.
All right. And so your visibility, and we're glad you're bringing it up, because the third eye chakra also has to do with standing out, being exceptional or different or individual or particularly visible. This is one of the things that was not allowed in the monastic orders. Everybody had to wear the same clothing, right? They had to look identical. They cut their hair the same way. They wore their clothes the same way. It was a uniform, so that they would not express any of their uniqueness or any of their individuality through dress or through any kind of physical form. And one of the things that we do suggest with you is that for you, particularly working with the visibility issue, is probably going to be more rewarding for you as far as creating greater success than working with the root chakra. Does this make sense to you?
Absolutely makes sense. I mean, even just yesterday, my friend Carl here visiting, he wanted to use his camera and his video. He said, "Say something." He asked me a question. He wanted me to say something on spiritual terms, my wisdom. He's like, "Heather, I want to tape you." And so I felt uncomfortable with that. And then earlier in the night, he was like, "Here, Heather, come and look." And I had such issues with just watching myself. I was just like, I didn't want to see. I didn't. And I know. And I even felt that. I said, when the topic with this workshop about shame and contracts, I felt I have such a issue with really seeing myself or really being visible.
All right. Well, we would say that you, in other lifetimes, you've been somewhat of a spiritual rebel.
Okay.
right? You can feel some of that even in this lifetime. Mm-hmm. Okay, if anybody has a code, this is the way it has to be, you know, who's the first one to say, absolutely not? It's you, right? All right, so you're really definitely going to compensate for that vow this time. One of the things that we suggest, though, is that as the spiritual rebel that you have been in other times, you've been punished severely for it. You've been taken down. You have been tortured. You have been, what, burned at the stake, or maybe something even worse. The channel was watching a TV a few nights ago, and they were pointing out how in the Inquisition, the clergy who were persecuting everyone who was not strictly, you know, within the limitations or with working within the box that they had, they were so filled with so much fear of the other, of something that was alien, something that was different, something that was beyond what they could control or manipulate. They were so terrified that the Inquisition became this vast, torturing, destroying engine, you know, to destroy anything that wavered from the narrow path. And of course, you were wavering quite a bit, because you had discovered a whole nother realm of things that nobody in the clergy would dare touch. Everything was guilt, shame, punishment, and so on. And what they did is that they had all this leisure and all this time to develop instruments of torture, one of which was a box. They would put a person in, and it had holes on the outside of the box. And once the person, and so they would hammer in pointy, you know, sticks, pointy metal, you know, with that was honed to a sharp chisel point. These holes were arranged so that it did not pierce the heart or cause instant death. Instead, when they closed the door, they would puncture the person, they would not come out, and the person would be in total agony for maybe several days before they finally die. All right? They could perfect that. And we would suggest you went to some kind of horrible death like that.
This is really interesting, because just a few nights ago, I was watching on like one of the Discovery Science Channel's old machines they made for torture.
Well, that's the program. Mm-hmm. It was just last week, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, mm-hmm. I was just watching it.
Mm-hmm. And how did you feel when you saw that?
Eventually, I said, Dennis, you know, I don't want to watch this anymore. Let's turn the channel.
Yeah, it was a bit much, wasn't it?
And even coming here, I was even asking Carl, I was saying to Carl on the way, I'm like, you know, I'm feeling some stuff coming up. I know I'm doing a workshop that's going to trigger something. I just want to let you know I may get a little emotional. So I've kind of felt the seeds of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all right. So something like that. For you, and you went unrepentant. You didn't pray for your sins to be absolved. You were saying, you know, screw you, up yours. You know, you're the ones who are doing evil here. You're the ones who are punishing. You're the ones who are creating the sin, you know, by doing what you're doing. And of course, they didn't like to hear that at all. And because you were calling it, in a sense, the way it was. And you were speaking out. So there's a part of you that's very hesitant about getting up, being seen, and being heard. So part of your discomfort at watching the video of yourself was hearing yourself speak. Mm-hmm. It was not just watching your body. Because, of course, in this reality, you know, women are loaded down with, from the get-go, with judgments about their bodies. You know, there was an experiment where these researchers got these men and women, and they said, okay, tell us something about your body. Describe your body. And all the women pointed, you know, there's a little drawing, and they would make little drawings, and they would point to where they had extra fat, or where the problems were, or the big ears, or whatever it was that they were on the guys always, regardless of what physical body they had, they would describe themselves in glowing terms, right? Because that's what guys were trained to do. It's like we got to appear like we're all together. We got to appear handsome. And we're going to pretend, we're going to have the fantasy we're handsome. You know, the women are like, oh, this is a limitation. This is a limitation. This looks ugly. This is horrible. I'll never be loved because my body, blah, 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 blah. So you got all that kind of stuff. Yes. But you also got, oh my gosh, listen to me. I'm speaking. I'm talking. I'm saying things. Oh gosh, I hope I don't sound crazy. I hope I don't say something. I hope I don't, you know, burp in the middle of it or something and humiliate myself. And so there's all this nervousness about it. We would suggest that that's more where your success limitations get snagged up.
Okay.
All right. Yes. It's not the dreams of the form per se. It's not the way that your work is going to be done. It's not the beauty of what you're attempting to achieve. It's not the, whether you haven't thought it through your business plan enough or not. It's really about you. Can you let yourself go out there and be that successful? Because if you're that successful, people are going to look at you and they're going to say, okay, what's wrong with you? They're going to, you see, there's this whole thing about jealousy. You know about jealousy, right?
Yes.
That if you get successful, that people are going to be jealous of you. You know where humility comes from? Originally, being humble and modest about one's achievements comes from because people used to believe that the spirits were jealous of humans. And that if you had too much success, they would come and take it from you. This was during the period in which people had shut off their perception of a spirit so much so that they gave inordinate power over to what we call the astrals, astral entities. Astral entities are which are limiting thought forms, those things that were pictured as gargoyles on the cathedrals. All right. The demons, you know, demons are actually thought forms filled with hatred and fear. You know, and the way that they show themselves to people who perceive their form were like monsters. It's where monsters came from. They came from the Dark Ages, okay? Mm-hmm. That's where people really began doing that because they were not allowed to do their rituals with the earth. They were not allowed to be pagans anymore. They were not allowed to have, do shamanic ceremonies and work with nature spirits. So they demonized it all right? And so you wouldn't mention what success you had for fear that these entities would come and take it away from you. All right? In a sense, you have some of that in you. Oh my gosh, if I celebrate too loudly, then all these people who are jealous or these energies that are just something, somebody's going to come and take it away. Do you understand?
Yes.
All right. And that's one of the pieces of visibility. Right? So at some point you made a choice to sit back, to get out of the limelight, to hide. And so you'll need to reverse your decision to hide.
Okay.
All right? How does that feel?
It feels so right on. It just feels so right on.
Because you see, as you gain in your power and your awareness of yourself, as you remember who you are and the light being that you are, you'll also realize, hey, you know, I'm creating this reality. And if you're creating this reality and you start building trust in yourself and love and appreciation of yourself, you're going to realize more and more that the reality you're creating is going to be safe and loving for you. Okay, and a safe and loving reality, see, that's a sign to pay attention to this, a safe and loving reality, right? That's what you want to have. You want to experience a safe and loving reality. And you have to change these choices knowing full well you are empowered and clear and capable enough to create realities that are in alignment with who you see yourself as being. And right now, you are holding yourself back.
Okay.
Your self-image is shrunken in a little bit. You're scared, you're hesitant, you're concerned about these issues. But we sense that when you get out there and you begin to see how successful you really could be, And it doesn't scare the pants off of you. You're going to celebrate. You know, wow, this is fabulous. And you'll keep stretching and keep stretching yourself and keep owning more of yourself.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And your success will reflect that, because your success is dependent on you and your personality and the way you come across and what you say and how you say it and mm-hmm. your communication. Yes. That's your success.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Very good. Someone else?
Hello, Galexis. This is Bonnie.
Hello.
I want to thank you for this workshop. I've been waiting for it for a long time. I've learned in the last year that I've had some spiritual lifetimes in the past that really entangled me to the point where I just thought I'd go through all the chakras, but it hit me. Instead of starting with chakra one, I could use some guidance, because I think all of this has really impaired my relationship with higher self. And I don't know where to begin.
All right.
I believe I had a lifetime as a nun and as a monk.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think I have celibacy issues, love issues, abundance issues, and so.
Right. But you see, the critical underlying piece you mentioned, you gave it away when you said you have an impaired relationship with your higher self.
Yes, I believe so.
Because you know where you're going. You know you're going to the fulfillment of yourself. You know that you're going to the total expansion of you. And you are on your homegoing, on a homegoing lifetime right now. And you know where you're heading. You're heading to that place where you can claim all of you. In order to do that, you have chosen as an aspect of this path is a connection with your higher self. Yes?
Yes.
All right. This is something that's important to you. Otherwise, you wouldn't have brought it up.
Yes.
All right. Well, your connection to your higher self from a chakra point of view, as from a vowel point of view, comes at the crown. All right. This is where you chop it off.
My favorite color is violet.
Wonder why. Now, you do have to understand that being on a spiritual path and knowing that violet is the color that is associated with the crown chakra, and the crown chakra is the top chakra, it's very easy to fall into thinking that violet is a better color than, let's say, red, which is the lowest chakra. So as long as you have no judgments about red, right?
I see.
Okay? Then having violet as your favorite color is not an attempt to you know, get above anything. You understand?
Yes.
And not to avoid something. It will be because it really is your preference. But we want to point out that the color of this whole universe, if you were to leave this universe and float out into that space between the fourth and the fifth planes, between the supercausal or far causal and the fifth plane of Sat Khand, in between, as you float through, you will see all the universes as eggs in various colors, many of which you don't even know at this time. Because there are rays of frequencies of light that you don't have in this particular universe, right? This universe is red. This whole universe is red. It's a red universe. That's your color, red, right? And as such, as you move through astral, causal, and supercausal, all those planes, you know, you leave the universe, hey, it was red. So all those levels of dimensions that you know that you're going to expand through and you're going to be more and you're going to be in spiritual ecstasy all the way through there, red will still be a very important color. Now, the reason we're saying this is because there's a lot of judgment on it. Red is considered a very power, a big power color, you know, ever since, what, Nancy Reagan, was it? Wore her red dress. Oh, gosh, she was the power. And a lot of times women do that. They wear red to signify that they're a strong, powerful woman. And men will also, to signify that they're strong, powerful men, will wear red ties. Okay? And you can see the picture of the summit, and here's all these guys standing around and women, and there are a lot of red ties and, you know, woman wearing red and so on. It's part of a hidden frequency of knowing that you've got to be strong, you've got to be in your power. And of course, root chakra is where you're grounded in your strength and grounded into yourself. Violet, on the other hand, has, as we said, crown chakra is halfway between this plane and the astral plane. And so there's a tremendous vulnerability to violet. If you get into violet, you can feel very ethereal. If you really get into the color, you may not really feel strong in the physical. Okay? So do you have any physical frailties?
I have a very powerful mind. Not much gets to me. I mean, I did have a terrible puberty. But
how about your physical body?
I've gotten away with murder. I'm healthy.
Good, good, good. So then you are accepting your red frequency. All right. All right. The point we're making is to know that all the colors have tremendous potency and they're all spiritual, right? But for you in particular, you know, you've have a good relationship with your root chakra, so that's good. And we just wanted to reinforce this so that you don't float off, okay? Because when you reconnect with that crown chakra, if you're grounded in your good red energy and grounded there, you won't, in a sense, get too spacey. All right. Now, part of your cutting off your crown chakra in this lifetime is so that you could function more powerfully in the everyday world. So that you could be more here, more present, more here. Now, when you seek to have connection with your higher self, you have to open up the crown chakra channel and keep it open. And so realize that as you do that, you're going to change your energies. Your energies are going to get lighter. There's going to be a sense of less rigidity in your reality. It's going to be less, what you might say, reliable and consistent. Are you ready for that?
I'll have to make myself ready for
Absolutely, because with a powerful mind, you have a tremendous, powerful rationale of things. Okay? And so we would say that the chakras you want to work with the most at this time will probably be third eye and crown.
Oh, thank you.
All right? And part of the reason that your mind is so developed is because you also have gifts from other lifetimes in which you were absolutely creatively inspired. And you have a lifetime as a very famous painter.
I do sketch very well. I remember thinking, this is fun, and I just seem to have a flair for it. I write well. Mm-hmm. I just never allowed myself to develop those skills. I am now.
Right, because those open up these portals up here in the head. And how in the world will you be able to stay inside the box if you open those portals up? You can't. And you wanted to be safe, so you decide to stay inside your box for a while, right?
Yes.
Okay. And so eventually when you finally said, okay, it's time to bust out of the box, in order to make it safe for me to make the leap out of the box, I've got to know where I'm leaping. I've got to know the theory of everything.
Okay.
All right. You'd probably be a very good scientist doing quantum physics, you know, and things like that.
I know.
You have a good mind for that. But that's not your journey this lifetime, you know. No, but you wanted to grasp everything. You wanted to know everything because you began to think, if I could just understand everything, I'll be okay. Right? But we have to point out is that until that crown chakra is really open, then as you work your third eye chakra, your mind thinking chakra, you can get more and more stuck in logic and linearity, and that's not a good thing. So we want to suggest that you don't want to just, you see, part of the journey is to exchange one box, bust it, and you get a larger box. Okay? And then you grow inside that box until eventually you're beating up against the walls and you feel like, what is it, Alice in Wonderland when she got really big and then she was stuck in this room and that was, you know, and suddenly she was all, you know, jammed in there. That's kind of what has happened for you.
Okay?
So you're right. You need to break the next box. But we want to point out that you need to stay grounded, just physically, earthly grounded, so that you can feel safe enough to let your mind expand to perceive outside of time limitations. Because your higher self does not exist in a linear time framework. It just isn't. And there's a temptation for your mind to project onto higher self kind of what you as a child projected onto, you know, to angels or to God or something, all right? That they're these kindly higher beings,
yes.
You know, who have a tremendous interest in you. And yes, your higher self has a tremendous interest. It loves you absolutely and unconditionally. But you want to be able to feel safe enough to open up and spread your wings and get outside the box. Okay? So that you can be vulnerable, but at the same time stay grounded.
Okay.
All right? And in this vulnerability, you can open up to receive the love from the divine. And you can expand your image of yourself and you can envision, third eye, you can envision yourself so much more.
Wonderful.
Because if you don't open that third eye as well as the crown, you won't see where you're heading. You won't see that where you're heading is to honor and know yourself as a divine light being. You'll think, oh, I just got to be better. And that's not, you know, that's not going to work.
No.
Or that, and of course we are saying it simplistically, but you have a whole line of intricate concepts about what better means. And so you want to like kind of free yourself from that, disentangle yourself from that. All right. So maybe you might want to just start with opening crown.
Okay, I will.
All right.
Thank you, Alexis.
All right. Well, thank you, dear one. And who's next?
Hello, Alexis. This is Diane.
Well, Diane, what a pleasure.
Yes, pleasure for me too. Absolutely. What you have spoken about today is so absolutely my life. I think I was one of those that didn't learn the lesson completely of restriction. I went into a philosophy of, I feel now, of a lot of restriction, or the elders around me, or I took on the idea of restriction to be a better person. So I limited my life, probably coming from a nun or monk in a past life. It just seemed to flow very easily with me. So after my husband died, I needed a little bit more joy in my life. So I went actually into another philosophy, which was really the basic same philosophy, but with a little bit more sociable things going on, yet it involved monastics surrounding me, nuns and monks. And
you actually worked with nuns and monks?
Yes. Yes. And I thought that I wasn't you know, being, let's say, volunteering, I didn't feel that I was subjected to their restrictions, but that wasn't true at all. It was subconscious, but it was also a conscious choice in many ways, because I had friends, I mean, everyone around me. I lived in the community, and it was there constantly. So I eventually had to break out and bust out and become a rebel in my own mind.
Yes.
And but the problem is that I'm still in the community. I still walk out my front door, and there I am. I may walk out my front door and say, I'm not dressed like a nun. What are they going to think? So I'm still in that box, even though I rebel against it and I dress the way I want to, or whatever, you know, the restriction is that's in my mind. It's still that I live in that community, and I'm not going over to that church right now anymore. But I know that it has been a big life lesson for me, a huge box that I had to break out of, and I'm still doing it. But I guess I'm wondering how to handle it. It's not that I can easily move right now. I need a yard for my dogs, and that's not easy to find a condo like that. So, and then the cost of the condo is reasonable for me. So everything's comfortable except for this past life that's right. You know, I'm surrounded by this box.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering, how do I cope with that now without it consuming me constantly?
All right. Well, the consuming you comes with your feeling a certain sense that you let them down in a way by you leaving, you know, energetically leaving the community, even though you're still physically there. Mm-hmm. There's a certain guilt about it. It's almost as if, for example, you had a friend and you said, you know, I just don't want to spend time with you anymore. And knowing that your friend would not understand why, you see. So you don't tell them why. You just withdraw, in a sense. You'd feel bad, wouldn't you?
Yes.
And that's what you're feeling about this. Mm. Like, I went into this community, I was part of it, I connected, it gave me a certain sense of fulfillment at the time, yes?
Yes, absolutely.
And now I cannot explain to them. I cannot tell them where I'm coming from now. I have to hide myself. And I've withdrawn from them. And they must wonder what's going on with me. And I feel really bad about it. I feel like I've kind of left them. And since I cannot communicate with them, I feel very isolated and alone now. Yes?
Yes.
So there's that, the self inside you that's saying this kind of message to you.
Mm.
Right? So first of all, you want to deal with that message. Right? Because you made a choice to go into that community for a reason.
Yes.
Okay? Do you remember the reason?
Yes.
Something about that community gave you a sense of solidity, of security, of a continuity of some kind of philosophy or thought or something, and you felt that these people were generally trying to be good people, and that they were, that this would be a place where you would find harmony and love and all those kinds of things. Yes?
Yes.
Well, you've discovered too that the people who are in there are not necessarily perfect as well.
Yes.
It's amazing, all the politics and ego stuff that goes on in monasteries. My. And little competitions and undercurrents and people not saying things and not being really true to who they are and not being real and all that kind of stuff. It's there too. It's everywhere, in a sense. So, in a way, there's a certain disillusionment that you if you were more courageous, if you were the type that was to go up and shake your fist and say, well, you know, up yours or anything like that, you would probably point it out to them. Because you see things that go on there and you don't say anything, yes?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. You have not communicated to them why you're being the way you are. They don't see you at church. Do they have any clue why? No. Mm-hmm. All right. Vow of silence.
Oh.
Yes, oops, it's right. All right. Because in your past, in your these other lifetimes that are feeding energies in, you're having fears that if you were to tell them exactly why you're not participating in the community as you always had in the beginning, they're going to, number one, disapprove of you and judge you. Number two, reject you. Number three, create hardship for you somehow. Number four, maybe kick you out. Yes?
Yes.
All right. So you keep it zipped.
Also because it doesn't help.
What?
What doesn't help? Speaking up.
Right. What? Yes.
It wouldn't help.
It would create problems, wouldn't it?
Yes, more than change anything. Yes.
Yeah, it would be even at the very best, they would not understand.
Yes, that's correct.
You know, and in your, there's a certain aspect, we said, in your compassion not to tell them, but then there's also the fear of the ramifications.
Yes.
And that's where the vow of silence comes in. Which means that to their perception, you're still part of the community, even if you don't seem to participate in everything. And so as a result, you still feel yourself interlaced, interwoven into the community energetically. Mm. Even though you personally mm-hmm. have spiritually stepped away from it, because very often tacit or being quiet is interpreted as agreement. And you always learned that you got into trouble when you said something. And this goes way back in this lifetime.
Yes, it sure does.
And keep your mouth shut, don't, because you would say things that were just wild, inflammatory, or confrontative, and you had to learn to be nice and do not confront. Yes?
Absolutely. I knew that. That was my main basis of social life.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Stay quiet. You know, and also, like we were talking about earlier, in the previous question, then stay invisible. Okay? Mm-hmm. Stay ordinary. So, of course, you're going to be dressed differently and you go out of your house and there you are dressed differently. You are not invisible.
I know. That's
the little... Ooh, this feels vulnerable. This feels weird. What are they going to think? Look at what I'm wearing, you see. But you're not going to say anything about it. You're still going to wear it, though, mm-hmm. because it expresses some aspect of you, also throat chakra. So you've got an issue there with that throat chakra, okay? So yes. That's where we would suggest you might want to begin.
Instead of the heart.
Instead of the heart, yes.
Oh.
All right. And the reason being is that what if you followed your heart? If you followed your heart, you would probably, in a sense of tremendous expansion, you would just, okay, I'm going to go where my heart leads me. And you would leave physically. Mm-hmm. And it scares you too, because you don't see where you would land.
Mm-hmm.
It's all nice and safe and secure. You've got everything all lined up. All your little ducks are lined up, except for this darn throat chakra. Now, what we would suggest is that also forgive yourself for having abandoned them.
Okay.
and release any judgments you have about yourself or judgments about them. Just till you're totally clear. Why? Because all of you who have experienced monastic vows and done monastic lifestyles and so on have found great pleasure and peace in them in other lifetimes. And it was imperative for that particular exploration of your spiritual path. And so those who are there in that community are in the perfect right place for them at that moment. Okay, so nothing to judge. They're not like, you know, they don't, it's not like they're stupid or anything. They're really are smart people there. They just don't know differently because their focus is there. And this is what they are learning. They're using that community to work their issues and work their themes through and do their personal growth and development with. And it's just right for them. But for you, it's not just right for you. Mm-hmm. So we would recommend that you do this clearing does not necessarily mean that you need to go up and tell them. When you clear the vow, you express yourself in other ways, like in your clothes, for example. You're expressing more of yourself in your dress. Yes?
Yes.
And so when you do that, do it with pride for, you know, this is my creativity. This is me expressing me. Mm-hmm. And it's okay. And give yourself authority and permission. Because basically silence was a way of giving authority to God originally. Mm-hmm. Not talking back to God, you know. Don't talk back. And don't get distracted. Stay quiet. Of course, man creating those hierarchies of the monastic orders, it was also a way for people to be more easily controlled as well. But express yourself. And if clothing still makes you feel uncomfortable because you're too visible and you think you're too much the odd person out, then find a channel of creative expression for yourself so that you can move your energy somewhere. Mm-hmm. And through some channel, okay?
Yes, I understand.
Because you've got to find a replacement mm-hmm. for that vow of silence. You've got to have some channel of expression.
That makes sense.
All right. Now, you'll probably find out after you do this part and you feel really at peace with this whole thing, then the issue with your heart may open up more. And you may see where you closed yourself off from relationships, or you had to lose, you know, a relationship. You had to be by yourself. You had to be, you know, alone, you and spirit. And then we would suggest, you know, after you do throat, mm-hmm. Go and do the heart. You don't have to wait, you know, a year or anything. You can do it in a couple of days later.
Okay.
You know, but just look at any time you do any of this vow breaking, at least for the first, let's say, for all the chakras, maybe three or four other ones or something, before it starts to be that you've gotten most of all the issues and now you're just, you know, wrapping up loose ends, before you get to that point, you'll realize that you're moving so much more energy through your body, through your system, through your psyche, through your spirit, that you're going to start radiating. You can be quite radiant. We're certain your friends have told you that at times, yes?
Yes.
Yeah. There are times when you're just like happy and you are a glow. You just being around you, you could feel that energy, feel that light, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so when you can get to that place then you will find with your heart chakra open, you'll be able to track to yourself the relationships that will work for you.
Wonderful.
All right.
Something really quick. You said I needed time to be alone with spirit. I was thinking that the same thing, and I'm thinking, I wonder what I'm, well, I know what I'm learning, but I'm wondering how long this
being alone with spirit's going to take, huh?
Yeah, yeah, if I've learned it yet, like, I've learned so much. I mean, am I over here?
Well, see, when you do the heart, when you get to the heart chakra, that ends the aloneness with spirit. In fact, you know, you have so many spirit friends and you can enjoy them, but you've hidden yourself and kept yourself quiet and shut your expression down so that you wouldn't be, you know, so you wouldn't disrupt anybody else.
Yes, that's true.
You didn't want to offend anybody, tiptoeing around everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not going to be you in the future.
Wonderful.
Okay?
Yes.
But you've got to realize that comes first before, you know, you're able to, you have to first be able to move your energies out from center. But right now, they coalesce inside.
Mm-hmm.
You wrap your energies inside. Being alone with spirit is not some solitary confinement. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It was, you were hiding for a while. It was your retreat. And hopefully, you have some really good relationships with your spirit helpers.
Yes, and I'm very open. If I'm upset, I voice my...
And to them, you can talk.
Yes, well, I may be a little tough on them, and I apologize. But it's my coming out.
They don't take it personally at all.
Good, because it's I guess...
That's one of the nice things. When you talk to one of your spirit helpers, they don't take anything you say personally.
I knew that.
Right. So don't ever feel guilty about it.
Oh, good. I guess I feel guilty, but I knew that.
Yes, you felt guilty and also
yeah, right.
You did that. Mm-hmm. So just realize that, because you want to get all the guilt, all the shame mm-hmm. off your expression.
Yes.
And so that you can reach your energies out and touch people with your love and your light. And this will bring to you all your opportunities.
Mm. Wonderful. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. All right. And who's next?
Hi, my name is Tony. I just had a couple questions kind of in the same line, but two things. One, when I know something's going to happen, sometimes I don't have the patience to wait because it could take a few years when I've already seen it. And the other thing is about the hermit monastic thing. The more spiritual I get and the more people that I help, I tend to take on their energies. So I just want to learn how to not absorb all of the, it's not just negativity, but it's all the other entities and people who are interested.
All right. Okay. Some of that also, that's an aspect of what we call martyrhood. And, you know, in religious traditions, you notice the very high standing of martyrs. You know, look at the Catholic Church. They have all these saints that were martyrs. Well, there's one saint that tore all his skin off or something. Ah, you know, they went through incredible, you know, circumstances to stand up for the light or the truth or whatever it is and so on. And martyrs are actually very powerful reality creators. They know how to use the stuff of reality creation. They know how to use energies. And so very often you find people in the service profession, spiritual service, psychological, and so forth, have this ability to work with energies of other people and or emotional energy. And at any time that you, any time, any day, night, 24/7, there's all these emotional energies flowing around from your collective, just flowing around in the air. And if you happen to have your radio set tuned to a frequency of some of those emotions, then you'll get them. It's like if you're sad and you're feeling sorry for yourself, then you're putting out, you're on the self-pity channel, right? So you'll get broadcasts of self-pity, right? The thing is just to realize that the people that you're helping have tremendous amounts of you know, intensity. They've got that radio station on to whatever they're feeling. Maybe they're feeling, you know, rage and anger, or maybe they're feeling fear, maybe they're feeling hurt, maybe they're feeling sorrow, whatever it is that they're feeling that you help them with. They have that station on, and it's broadcasting. You have a tremendous ability when you are a martyr energy of being able to tune into any of those frequencies. You have radio stations that got all those channels, every last one of them. Now, why would you do that? Well, because unless you had them all, in a sense, you wouldn't understand what the people are experiencing. You understand? You have a natural compassion and empathy and understanding of what they're going through. Even if you've never personally gone through it just like they have, you also know, you just know what's happening. Yes?
Yes.
All right? And so in there lies your ability to assist them. So the key is not to not feel this stuff or to not get involved with looking at it and checking it out and playing with it and so on. The trick is that when you're done with them, and when they leave you and they go off into their life there, and the session is over or whatever it is, that you tune off that radio station. Now, how do you do that? First thing is that you look at what the theme is that you have been talking to a person about and helping them with. You ask them, how does this theme function in my life? Where have I encountered this personally in my life? Am I clear with it? Have I healed it? Because a lot of times people will come to you with issues that you're working on. Have you noticed?
Exactly. Yes.
And sometimes you'll get three or four people in a row with the same, almost exact scenario going on.
Or if we pull cards, everyone gets the same card.
Oh, the same cards. Exactly. Yeah. Come on. Right. You're working on the same issue over several sessions. And so what this is giving you is a message for yourself. Where is it going on in your life? How do you open up your radio station to this? You know, you only open it up if you feel unfinished somewhere there. If you feel there's more that you want to learn, and you are a person who's curious and you love learning. Yes?
Yes.
You just want to know more. You're intrigued by looking into the psyche of people and what's going on. You just love the stories. You just are learning so much. So what more do you need to learn about that particular theme or issue? Come to terms with it. Say, okay, I need to learn for in this particular issue, like what I was helping my friend with. I need to really remind myself of who I am. I remind myself that I'm capable of making choices. I'm the authority here, let's say. All right? If you're working with, like you're mentioning a card, is that tarot?
Just different oracle cards.
Or different type of oracle cards. All right. Then there are certain themes, you know, like am I working with the element of earth? Am I working with the element of air or fire or water? You know, kind of look at what am I working with here and what do I wish to do and what new choices would it be advisable for me to take in order to deal with this particular theme or issue? And when you do that, you get to a place to where, oh, I get it. And there's a shift in you. And then you can surround that person with light who gave you the message, your message bearer. So nice. They give you money too, don't they?
Yes.
How good is that, right? They come and bring you all your messages and pay you at the same time.
Fantastic.
It's a fabulous life, eh? Okay. So thank them. In meditation, and thank them for what they have brought to you and put on your platter for you to look at. And you thank them, you surround them with love, and you just send them with love on their way. Because when you are, in a sense, when you get the message, the radio station closes. That particular channel closes. You see? Yeah. Now, we do not encourage you to look out your situation with people as being, oh, I'm taking on their negative energies.
I don't see it particularly as negative. I do see the messages that are, you know, certain themes.
Good.
I don't really, I just.
If some of them may be heavy.
Some of them are stronger and don't want to leave. But
yeah, and some of them you don't like.
Right.
And they're unpleasant feeling, that kind of thing. All right, so it's good what you've said, because if you make any kind of distinction between those energies and other energies, if you start making any kind of judgments about it, then you get stuck in it for sure. So what you want to do is to realize that you're not protecting yourself against anything. There's no protection energy there. In fact, if you find that you're get stuck with somebody else's issue and you just haven't cleared it out, or just seems to keep dogging you all the time, what we'd suggest is personify it. Stand it in front of you and see that issue personified. Maybe the issue has to do with, being vulnerable or visible, you know, like we've talked with some others. And maybe you stand it in front of you or something like that, and you just look at it and it looks at you, and then you just breathe it into you. And as you breathe out, you just send it on behind you and on out. And what this will do is this will counteract the tendency to say, I'm tired of dealing with this issue, and you start pushing it away. And as soon as you push it away, whatever you resist sticks you, right? So what you do is you bring it in through you and blow it out the back. It just comes right through you. Now, anything that's truly in resonance with you, you will feel it. It will stick with you in a sense. It will be with you. And what's generally true is in those situations, there's a small part of it, really maybe a focal piece of it, that will stick with you. But the majority of it can leave. You see?
Yes, thank you.
But you've accepted it and you've received it. And so what will come up next will be that focus piece. You won't be keep bringing up the huge pile over and over and over, because a huge pile keeps coming back so you can get that little piece. You see?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
All right. And you just need to, at some point you have, oh, an insight. Ah, and then you're done. And it's gone. Now, sometimes you start to feel responsible for some of your clients, yes?
Yes.
Okay. They are not your responsibility, dear one. What is your responsibility to your clients? Your responsibility to your clients is to express to them what you are able to gain through your resources in the moment for them to use for themselves. And we emphasize in the moment, because after they leave, the day or two after, you could wake up after thinking about them, you know, during the night, you know, even when you wake up or something. And then you wake up in the morning and you're thinking about them still and so on. And the thing is that so you may be finding, oh, I should have said this. I could have said that. Here's more. You know, they come to you at a particular time arranged between the two of you on a spiritual, energetic level for what you have to tell them then. You understand?
Yes.
You're not responsible for following up and saying, oh, I need to tell you about this and I should tell you about that. If you don't do that, you may feel guilty that maybe you didn't do good enough in the session. Has that ever happened?
Yes.
All right. So you can let go of that too. It works the way it is supposed to. Okay, it's kind of like in astrology they do Tarot does it and astrology does it, and sometimes it's just a reading of the moment. It's just what's present right now. What do you need to know right now? And essentially, that's what you're doing. It's every session is like that. So if you learn something additional after they leave, that's for you. That's not for them. Okay? So you take those ideas, have a journal or some notebook, and write them down. and then they'll be gone. Okay?
Yes, thanks.
All right. See, the important thing is not to take on baggage, because that is a crown chakra issue, that you take on baggage, that you martyr yourself. You're not here to sacrifice and serve and grovel, you see. You're here to assist, to help, and to celebrate and co-celebrate. Yes?
Yes.
All right. So you just want to stay in that, in the light, in the flow of that, in the rightness of it, in the trueness of it, and recognize that you're getting a lot of your own personal process through working with people. And so have a notebook or something where you can record things that you learn. And as you do that, then you release the need to keep reminding yourself of them. You let go of the need to keep taking on other people's stuff so that you can work it out and work it through and so on. You understand?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, as we said, that's kind of crown chakra, the martyr syndrome, is that I must be of service and I'm not worthy to be served, or I'm not worthy to be loved and to be valued and all that kind of stuff. I have to serve. And those people that feel like totally committed, I'm in service to the earth, to the goddess, to the planet, to God, to this, to that cause, or this or the other. I'm in service. It's a tricky business, being in service. And you're in a service profession. So don't let yourself get stuck in the servile serviceness. Don't lose yourself there. It's your growth process. Always stay empowered. All right? Yes. Sometimes some of this happens. It's very much like the channel and Daniel went to a workshop. And these particular types of workshops, there's always a closing song. Yes? It's always played. Okay, everybody just listen to this song. And that's the end of the workshop, is this song is played. Well, it took them, how long did it take to get that song out of your minds?
Oh, weeks.
Weeks. You know, sometimes it just stay in there, get stuck in there. And they would just be humming. And all of a sudden, it was just like, it'd be stuck in there. All of a sudden, one of them would hum a theme and the other one would say, "Stop it! I was just getting it out of my brain and now it's back in there." This is the same kind of principle that happens when you have clients and have issues that are kind of intriguing, that you enjoy exploring and learning about, right? So what may happen over time is that the information that you get from your clients or from your thoughts and your feelings about them and that you've written down may develop into your material, into your book, right? Something like that. Or something that you may want to teach it, or you may want to share it in some way. Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Excuse me.
What's that? Is there a battle over the microphone? Okay.
Yeah.
There's only one more question.
It's okay. As there is... extremely important for me. It's Paulina. This is a process right now I'm going through. I'm realizing that my creativity completely shut.
Yes.
And it doesn't allow me to expand, to grow, and it doesn't allow me like to even get out of my box. I overgrown so much, it practically suffocated me.
Mm-hmm.
The second problem, it's a hermit mode, but it's even when I first time draw Carolyn Mace archetypes card, first card was hermit. Yeah, it's just, but I'm mostly concerned with the complete shutdown of my creativity. Partially, I know it's a little bit coming from this lifetime, but I know completely that it's mostly coming from previous lifetimes.
Right. You know how the people who are the greatest visionaries in any culture are very often the artists.
Yes.
Yes. The artists are the ones who stretch beyond the limitations, go outside the box, find what's on the other side of whatever limitation or boundary or wall or whatever that's been constructed. And, dear one, you've had this more than once. You've had this more than once in your lifetime experience. And when there comes a great pogrom, when there comes a great, resettlement of control and focus, where there's only one way to be, who gets persecuted first? It's the artists. Because they're the ones that seem to be uncontrollable. They're too wild, too free, too much out there. And so, dear one, you've been really snagged up in that one. And at this point in your life is the time for you to really come out. So you're really feeling those vows of cloistering. And it's where you've been hiding, in a sense, and hiding your light, but under the bushel, so to speak, where you've been keeping yourself away from the world for fear that when you shine your light too brightly, you're going to be attacked, because that's what's happened before, right? So creativity is dangerous if you're powerful enough. Your creativity earlier in your life could flow because you weren't powerful enough. Do you understand?
Yeah.
And so the shutdown happened when you entered into a time of greater power, a time of greater choice on your part. So we would recommend for you to work second chakra to release the vow there. No creativity. And you, it might be also check out in which one works really better, in a sense. The third eye can also be, did you have visions and dreams? Did you really see too far forward, too far outside the box? Were you persecuted for that? What is it? What is the most unsafe one? The creativity? Because that creativity could get you into trouble, or envisioning what's possible and stretching possibility. Is that going to get you in more trouble?
I think envisioning was...
All right. Okay, so maybe you want to start there. That you shut down your visions and dreams. That somehow you were not worth it. Society would have destroyed you. That kind of thing. But you're at a time in your life where you're feeling the real limitation of your choice to be the hermit. You're really feeling you're pushing at the walls. You want to get out of the box now. You've been in the box for some years, and it's time for you to get free. Time to bust the box.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. So at some point, you want to remove the vow of cloistering or hermiting yourself.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
What's that? All right. So you don't have to fight over the mic. You can pass it over there, and we'll do that.
First of all, I want you to know I'm very happy and excited to be here. I before, many times, I wanted to come, but my health kept me from coming, and I was disillusioned by it. But the main purpose, and since I do have the ability to ask you and get an answer about something that I have been thinking about a long time, is that I came down with hepatitis about 15 years ago, and the doctor said not worry about it. It wasn't anything to worry about. And then after about 5-6 years, it started acting up. Well, about that time, I had been going to Lazarus. I would miss a seminar for 7 years. I was studying. I was taking healing classes. I was writing. I could write like 15, 20 pages every other day. I was painting, and I could paint things and beautiful things that just came through me. I was just like flying. Everything I would touch would turn to something great. And then what happened, just as I was writing like 3 or 4 books at one time, I had a car accident, and it was rear-ended, and it gave me a concussion. And then what happened is that the hepatitis started getting worse and comes in my body and paralyzes my brain and hurts my stomach. And so what it did, it closed me down to where talking about silence and invisible and being a hermit. Well, when that happened, the only thing I could do was stay home and watch TV. I couldn't work the computer. I started stuttering, and just the opposite of what I was. But in the interim, the last 30 years, I had been studying metaphysics, I mean, a lot, meditating and writing things from my meditation.
Yes.
This is like 15 years ago. And so I had all these plans about doing things and creating and all this stuff, and I would even do visualizing. And I learned in Lazarus to visualize stories and then keep adding to it. So I was doing that. It was going fast. And so what happened was I went to healer after healer after healer, spent so much money, and then I took interferon. They talked me into taking it. They said 1 year, and I took it for 1 year, and I almost died. It was horrible. And then she tells me I have to take it another year, but I refused to. She said it would come back. Well, it did. And that's been a year ago.
And so what are your symptoms at this point in time? What are your symptoms in this point in time?
What happens, it totally paralyzes, freezes my brain. It's in my arms, it's in my heart, my stomach, and my liver. And so I close down. And the only thing about it is that it closes you down so you don't speak up. And when people are rude and are jealous of you, you can't really, you want to just tell them. But it closes you down to where all you do is take it. And people are rude to you because you have this illness, you know, and because they sense it, and they sense your vibrations low, and they sense they can take advantage because I'm not all there. My mind isn't working.
You're defenseless.
Yes. And then you really see people for what they really are. And then I said, well, what is this all about? And I get so disillusioned because every time I get better, I try this and I try that and I get better and I start getting well, then all of a sudden, whap, I'm back down again.
Yes.
Back in bed. I just says I was creating a whole bunch of different things. I have to stop and I have to be in bed and then go through the same cycle over. So I'm wondering, like, you know, I keep going it over in my head. What is this all about? What am I supposed to learn?
All right.
Is that all this success and fame and all that stuff important anyway? It's probably teaching me that isn't. What's really important is to be humble and loving and sincere, compassionate, and be real. And so, but in the meantime, I am still ill, and I can't figure out what it is that's, I have to go through this.
All right. Well, you're dealing with you're trying to break through into your freedom, but you have what we would say an internal poison in your self-image. And this internal poison poisons your image, creating it to be, it's shrinking back, and also projects onto the world certain qualities which are then attracted to you, which are reflecting back to you. Now, the energy that is underneath this is all having to do with the, what we call them boundary dwellers. We're not using it in the same terminology as Lazarus says, but when you're breaking free of consensus reality, these are the two energies that you meet. And these generally scare the bejesus out of you and get you to run back into the box.
sure what these two energies do.
To both of you.
Yes, that's why. It's when we were talking, we don't, the throat chakra doesn't blow, but when we get into touch with some of your issues, it's quite vulnerable right now, and so it'll blow. All right. These two boundary dwellers, terror and rage. All right. What it means is that you're not releasing your rage, and that rage is has created for you a limit of what you can do in this reality. If you have rage in you that is not expressed, not released, and not healed, it will poison your whole system. It will attract to you people who take advantage of you, who are mean. It will create all sorts of horrible punishments that seem to be for what? You don't know that you did anything wrong. It will just create this whole sense of powerlessness in the face of your circumstances of your life. And the terror that comes in will come in because you have no idea where it's coming from. It comes like a thief in the night. It just suddenly shows up and you are in a confrontation with it. And so that could happen any time.
Yes, well,
So we would recommend for you, this has to do, as far as monastic vows are concerned, it has a lot to do with third chakra, where you gave up your will. And here you're trying to, you're taking your will and your capacity to imagine and your capacity to know who you are and the capacity to know things and opening up your second chakra of your creative generation and your third eye chakra of visions. It opens up other chakras, but the switch is in third chakra in your power, where you gave your power up, where you lost your power or had your power appear seemingly ripped away from you. And the place that's vulnerable for you, where you play out your power dilemmas, is in your body. That's your commission of challenge. That's your place of greatest challenge, is to play it out in your body. We would suggest that perhaps to take your power back, you also, in the process of it, have to release all the anger, all the resentment, all the rage, all the frustration, all the disillusionment and disappointment and all the entitlement that you had and all that kind of stuff that's in there. Now, some of that is being exacerbated from other lifetime experiences, so it may seem more than what would be normal or natural for this singular life. And we would agree it's more intensified by other lifetime circumstances where you were the victim, where you were suppressed, where you were crushed, where you were the bright light that attracted too much attention and you were just whammied on, and so on. And so we would recommend deliberately, consistently going through rage releases. All right. And when you go and find, if you go, still go to energy healers, go to energy healers and just have them pull out rage, pull out anger, pull out resentment, pull out bitterness, pull out anything in the anger spectrum. You understand? Just keep pulling it out, pulling it out, pulling it out. Because it got layered in there. In this lifetime, it got layered in there. There's tremendous resentment. And then every time you go through the cycle where you expand and all of a sudden there's all this possibility, you hit the ceiling and the ceiling comes crashing down on you. And you're powerless. You feel powerless. You cannot, your immune system is down. You cannot defend yourself. Your brain is frozen up. You can't talk and defend yourself. You cannot stand up for yourself. You have to go lie down. You have to go to bed. You cannot, you know, stand in your power. You cannot stand in your will. You understand?
Yes.
You gave these up in other lifetimes as part of the sacrifice you had to make. And when you go above a certain level, you kick in the program. That's why it doesn't happen. That's why at the very beginning, when everything starts to go a little bit better again and so on, everything starts to flow and you're feeling better and so on. There's a period where now, where you got slammed down, you're expanding again. But when you hit that limit, bang, it triggers. It's like a bomb. And it slams you back down. So that it keeps you in that box. And you will stay in that box as long as you have rage. And you will project the ugliness of other people into your reality. Whereas when the rage is gone, you will be able to tell, because people will be genuinely more loving, more real, more affectionate. It'll be safer. You'll feel happier. Your reality will seem to be much more magical. That's how you can tell from external circumstances that you're on top of your rage. You see?
Yes, but when I'm like that, in that situation with physically, and I attract these people, it's always people who can sense that I'm not really that strong, so their ego comes up and they want to be right and they want to put you down.
All right, now, this program where you, when you're weak, that other people are going to put you down, this is you perceiving the chauvinistic culture. You can either be weak or you be strong. Either control or be controlled. Dominate or be dominated. It's an either or. The reason you're attracting people who will put you down when you're weak is because you're in one of these either-or dilemmas. What do you do when you're strong? What did you do when you were strong? Did you judge other people?
I think to some degree.
Say yes, you did.
I'm working on that now, and
well, yeah, and it's good. You're going to let go of judgment.
The only thing I don't judge, but I acknowledge what's going on, and I see it for what it is. But I don't judge because it isn't worth it.
Well, actually, one of the things that you said earlier when you were asking us the question was talking. You saw how people really were.
Yes,
that's a judgment. That's an assumption. That's a projection.
I'm working on that too, because I was listening to a tape and it mentioned that, and that if to not be bothered by that, that is their problem, and you know, and not judge.
But how can you be in the state in which you are not only not bothered and not taking it personally, but you are able to let it go so much that you don't need to keep bringing that message into you? What do you need to get there? You need to release the rage.
Well, the one thing was that I didn't like about what was going on with me was that at the moment something happened, that I would, you know, call their attention to it and say, hey, look, it, you know, why did you do that? That was rude. You know, they want to be right. But I held it in and I didn't say anything. And then I just walk away from it rather than saying and telling them.
All right. Well, that's a secondary factor, is your vow of silence. That was a secondary factor. That was a survival mechanism that you found secondarily. Primarily, it's your power. You put yourself into places where you're not powerful, and then you're pissed about it. You have your power ripped away from you by your body. And there's nothing you can do about it. And you're filled with rage. And rage paralyzes. And the terror comes in, oh, what if? And it will paralyze as well. So we have to conclude right now. But what we do want to emphasize, don't go and judge yourself about this. And don't get, I shouldn't have to do all of this, you know, work on this rage and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's like I need just to not be bothered by people. If you get rid of the rage, you will not be bothered by people and you will not attract this. This is
no, that's exactly something
this is the message that's coming in.
Not to be bothered by it.
But you cannot just stop being bothered by it. You can rationalize it, but that doesn't work. That doesn't end it. The only way you stop being bothered is by stop creating the energy of powerlessness in you, and anger in you, and resentment in you.
Well,
and that's releasing the rage, Duan. Releasing the rage.
Is that related to the hepatitis?
Absolutely. Directly. That's what hepatitis comes from. It's powerless rage. That's its core. It has other factors, but that's the core. All right? And like we said, it's being reinforced from other lifetimes, but that's the core. All right? So we would suggest...
To be able to express myself when something's happening and
well, you're not going to express something... You're not going to be able to express yourself. You're looking at your solution in your response mechanism. The solution is in the response mechanism inside you, not whether you can speak or not or respond or not, but the response mechanism is that you're anchoring in more and more limited perspectives of your reality, and you're angry about it. That's what needs to, that cachet needs to be busted. And that's third chakra, where you gave up your power and your will and your choice. Right. So that's where we'd say begin.
So
you also have second chakra and throat chakra. Now we must close in order to finish this workshop on time. But we do feel that if you will do that, if you will deliberately release anger and rage on a deliberate daily basis, you will see a most amazing turnaround. Okay? Well, you don't have to work with chakras, but you just write down your list of everybody who's been mean to you in your life. Just write the whole list. Keep writing until you can kind of remember it all. And then each one of them, you go through in your mind, you tell them off, and you get it off your chest, and you visualize yourself being violent, beat them up, then blow them up, and then forgive them and let them go. And then go down to the next person. And the next person, you may want to set up your top 10, go down one at a time, get it out, get it out, get it out. And then do your liver, do your, do the hepatitis personified, do consensus reality, people being mean to other people. You know, just find whatever really suits your fancy. Get your inner child self and your inner adolescent self and arm them with weapons and go and blow up, you know, schools or something, you know, if the educational system is what sucks, or lawyers' offices, or how about that, medical practices and hospitals. Just go blow them up. Because they're putting you on stuff that just makes the situation worse. There are natural healings for this. There's natural substances for hepatitis. You don't have to have it in such an active form. It's the rage flaring up. It's the shutdown that happens when you go beyond, you know, you're getting too big for your britches kind of thing, where you've set that marker, and that's when you set it off. And rage is what holds that marker in place. So you see, so when you get that rage gone, you won't have the limitation anymore. All right, dear one, thank you so much for your question. We're going to take a 10 minutes? 10-minute break, and come back and be prepared. We're going to tell you the exact process that you're going to use to break your vows, and then we're going to take you through a meditation in which you can break a vow and really feel it gone, really clear, really clean, really get it, okay? And this meditation you can use subsequently for other vows, other decisions, and other choices, and other circumstances. All right. So, farewell for now.